Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Braun has got the lead. This is not surprising. I just don't know why Curtis Hill isn't part of this polling. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Good to be back. It was a great trip to Israel. Glad everything went safely. And part of that, I will admit, is luck. I was in areas two different times where I was there, and 12 hours later, there was a rocket attack. And if you say to yourself, well, it's not like it was like right, you know, 2 minutes later. These are areas that are getting attacked to the south central, to the north. It's a constant level of attack. Israelis live under this all the time. So, yeah, it's odd to be at this place in the north, Kibbutz Matsuva, it was called, and then 12 hours, which is, you know, just a little over a mile away from the Lebanese border, and then it gets attacked. And the attacks from the north especially have not stopped. There have been some more attacks from the south, from Hamas. And Hamas, as we've discussed, man, on the ropes, according to a lot of sources, but not done yet. But I will talk more about the trip to Israel, and I'm going to share with you this hospital in it's called the Western Galilee Medical Center, building an underground hospital above their already existing hospital, and how that works and how they prepare for just total disaster. I'm going to share that interview with you coming up in just a little bit. But this polling for the governor's race in Indiana shows Braun has 34%. Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, 7%. Eric Doden, a businessman out of Fort Wayne, was 7%. And Brad Chambers, the former Secretary of Commerce, at 5%. So the Chambers stuff I get, because he had the least name ID, because Doden has been running for a while. But Doden's been running for a while, and Chambers was able to get within 2 points in a matter of months. So that's a real issue for both Doden and Suzanne Crouch. Now, it's weird that Curtis Hill is not on here, because I would assume Hill, because of the activists in Indiana, he can raise the least amount of money and get the most bang for the buck. I believe that to be true. I wholeheartedly believe it. And then there is Jamie Rittenour, who is very little known in this race as well on the Republican side. None of this is surprising. With Braun holding the lead, Braun's got the most name ID. Allow me just for a level of clarity and a level of we're all on the same page. We're 2 months away from the primary in Indiana, and I'm here to tell you there's a lot that's going to drop in 2 months. Not because I have any particular insight or knowledge to it, but because that's what's going to happen. There are good-sized names with good-sized checkbooks in this race who all want it. And they are going to deliver. They are going to punch. They are going to fight. This is what they're going to do. So the point that I make is that the Braun in the lead right now, I don't know if that's something that he should rest on. If I'm the Braun team, I wouldn't. And seeing Braun in the lead by double digits isn't, for the rest of the candidates, something that I'd be concerned with. The opposition research, oppo research as it is described, that's going to start hitting. That is going to start getting thrown around over the next 2 months like it is their job. You know, you keep your powder dry. You save your money, and now is the time. Now is the go time for money. Now is the go time for the checks to be written and for the hits to come. Yeah, there's nothing here that surprises. Braun support, according to the research in the Republican primary, is about 10 points higher among men than women. 51% of women are undecided ahead of the May election, which could bode well for Suzanne Crouch. if people think that they would just vote for another woman. This is just part of the point. The reporting there at IBJ, IBJ.com, the Indianapolis Business Journal, there's movement aplenty ahead. And this is, I mean, we can say it now, this is the start of the season. It's 2 months away to the primary. This is the start of the season. So now we'll start really digging in, paying attention. I've got interviews with all of these candidates. I'll be sharing them all right here. All of them right here. We're just finishing them up next week, and then I'll have the interviews for you, and you'll be able to see them because they're all on video, and I'll share them with you here as well. Everything regarding this Republican primary, we've got it covered. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today. So my trip to Israel included some time at the Western Galilee Medical Center. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Just an idea of the level of preparation that is going on. Israel understands its enemy. And the rocket attacks in the north have increased from Hezbollah, a terrorist organization supported by Iran. That's where they get their money. That's where they get their funding. But this is an organization far stronger and far more prepared than Hamas. Now, that sounds insane, except it's true. Hundreds of thousands of rockets is what they have. We will get into, over the next couple weeks, exactly how that was allowed to happen from the Israeli government, from the world, from the United States. This is what happens when you appease people. This is what happens when you try to go for peace at all costs without recognizing that your enemy doesn't want peace. They want you dead. They want you dead. That's reality. The North is now dealing with this reality. They all know war is coming. And so at the Western Galilee Medical Center, which took a direct hit from a rocket in the Second Lebanon War of 2006, has built this facility. This is not, you know, I'm not saying anything, you know, that's secretive. They knew I was recording, and this has been out for a while, and there's published reports about it. They have an underground hospital. They have an underground hospital. It's incredible, by the way. And so when I was there, I was there in a briefing from one of the doctors who leads the not only the hospital, but the trainings, the continual trainings that they have. Dr. Tzvi Shelig, TSVI is his first name. And this is a guy who has served on the front lines, served with the Israeli military. This is a guy who has, he's been deployed out to Haiti. He's been deployed into African nations with Israel, trying to help them build hospitals and putting together field hospitals. Incredible, incredible story. But this was the briefing that he gave us. And the full video is coming out. It'll be available to you at TonyKatz.com. This was the briefing that he gave about what it is that they're expecting, what it is that they're dealing with, and exactly what it took to build this hospital, to put this all together, and the addition of new trauma beds, because the group I was with, the Partnership for Western Galilee, was able to work to help them build another trauma room. Crazy amounts of money, but it's unbelievably helpful to them to be able to deal with patients who are coming in, whether they're soldiers or just civilians. So Dr. Tzvi Shelig is who you're going to hear from. And my question comes at the end about what it is they're dealing with and what it took to build this all out and why it's necessary, especially when you have a hospital that holds 800, but underground you only have room for 400.
Welcome to the Galilee Medical Center. My name is Dr. Tzvi Shelig. I'm the deputy director of the hospital the past, 8 years, and I'm in charge of the emergency preparedness of the hospital, plus the innovation programs, the surgical department, the trauma center, many, many other things. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your help, and I assure you that the second trauma room will be fully operational and will save lives. I'm sorry to say that, because nobody knows when, but obviously it's going to happen. can happen in an hour, it can happen in a week, it can happen in a month, it can happen in a year, but sooner or later the northern front will erupt. And we will be under a continuous missile attack. And you can remember that we're safe here, so you can not worry about us, but you will all know that you saved lives. Because 6 trauma beds is nothing compared to the scenario that we are expecting, unfortunately, for the past few years. We're preparing for it. I mean, the 7th of October did surprise the country, obviously, the settlements of the Otif. But it didn't surprise us. What surprised us, that the northern front did not erupt yet. Now we know too many reasons why it didn't erupt. Some of it has to do with America's intervention. I heard that you saw me on TV talking about it. And I was very emotional about it because it was true. And it still is. And sooner or later, one day or another, we will find ourselves in a situation where a continuous missile attack hits this region. The thousands of soldiers that are spread around the northern border will be in full combat against the Radwan forces and Hezbollah. We don't illude ourselves that it's not going to happen. How many injuries will arrive at the hospital in the first strike? Because it's going to start sometime. No one knows when, obviously. No one knows what's the extent of the war that will erupt. And obviously no one will be able to control it once it happens. How long does it take? No one knows. We know what's going on in Gaza right now, still. And what will go on in Gaza for the next, I don't know how much time. As long as it takes. As long as it takes. But once the situation will erupt, we think we will have about, we don't know how many attacks, but it's going to be massive attacks throughout, the continuous missile attacks of 2 or 3 hours or so, with infiltration of terrorists. Now, we might have stopped 6 tunnels that crossed the border a year and a half ago, but no one knows if there are more. I assure you, there are many tunnels that gets them close to the border. So we're preparing ourselves to all these scenarios, but for us as a hospital, is to be prepared to save lives of our soldiers, of our community. Now the missile attacks will hit in many places at once. The drones will strike strategic places. We accept the situation that we'll have to do it without electricity, without cellular. We're preparing for it. We're preparing for a continuous missile attack with a cyber attack, without electricity. A few words about this place. This is the nerve center of the hospital. Obviously, it's fully protected. We have an antenna for satellite phones in case cellular goes down. The hospital has generators to last, fully functional in the protected shelters for over a week. So maybe the whole of Israel will be on, how would you say, alata? Alata.
Blackout.
Blackout. The whole Israel might be on blackout. We're going to be here fully functional still. So this is This is where we train all the time. We drill ourselves all the time. We drill our staff in this situation. We have a drill at the 14th of month in a week from now. Another one. Since the war, we started drilling in the underground facilities. You made us a problem. Another trauma room is very hard to control. It's hard to control one. But once you have to control two, you have the same bottlenecks, the same city, the same operating theaters. Now you have to make the decision for two sites. So these are all things that we drilled together. We created, it's in Hebrew, I apologize, because it's, you know, it was built for the unmet need of managing a mass casualty event in a hospital in the underground facilities. No one ever done it because no one ever lived in the underground facilities, as we do for 5 months. And you can see these are the operating theaters. Five are now active. Four of them are now in between operations. And you can see the dashboard. Practically, we are in the biggest bottleneck right now for this underground emergency everyday life is the underground beds. Because we are a hospital of 800 beds or so, and we live in an underground shelter of 400 beds. And they're almost full every day because we operate on 9 rooms. Okay? So what we do is we discharge the patients quickly. Right now we're working on one more site that we might make it available in the next couple of months. Hopefully that the Northern Front will not erupt. I'm going to stop because I want to hear your questions. Yes.
You talk, sir, about expecting all of these patients, all of these injuries, all of these issues, and what you game plan. What have you game planned as the top three injuries you expect to see?
Obviously, great question. The bombs are going to hit the community here. Now, some people, like myself, we have a sheltered room, which is fully protected against shreds, against explosions, against... Obviously, if a direct missile, depends how big it is, hits the room, then many of the people who live here, Nahariya, and obviously in many of the settlements around this hospital... I mean, we serve a community of 650,000 people. Some of them do not have sheltered places. So we expect a lot of shredded wounds, hedif, explosion wounds, blast wounds. And we're doing that on an everyday basis because once a week, there's an attack. Just an hour ago, a chopper almost landed at our helipad with injured soldiers. So we're working on it all the time. 5 months, once or twice a week, we get wounded from rockets, explosions, anti-tank missiles. It happens all the time.
It really is an absolutely incredible facility. The video will be up there where at tonycats.com or on YouTube, wherever it is you get the videos, it's going to be up, the whole interview and everything else. I'm looking forward to you seeing it as well as also hearing it, and I only ask that you help share them everywhere. People need to know, and certainly these are the things in more depth than getting reported in any level of regularity by American press. They're not even discussing the North. They're not discussing the threat of Hezbollah. They're not discussing the daily rocket attacks. I mean, some towns are getting 50 rockets in a day. That's now. And this is what's considered normal in the North? This is their everyday life? Oh, holy hell. So with that, I'm glad I was able to share it with you. Be sure to get the video and be sure to share it everywhere. Share all the videos over there at TonyKatz.com or you get them on YouTube, wherever you get them. I'd appreciate it if you would. I'm Tony Katz. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today. numbers have come in, and they don't make sense, at least at the first. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? Good to be back in the saddle. U.S. job growth, 275,000 jobs. The expectation was 198,000. Never mind the fact that the Dow keeps missing it. Whatever happened to trying to cool down the economy? But that's not the story. The story is unemployment is now up to 3.9%, which is 0.2% higher than it was, but 0.3% higher than where it was this time last year. Dr. Matt Will joins me right now, joins us, economist at the University of Indianapolis. Dr. Matt Will on the X is where you find him there in the social medias. Let's talk about these numbers. First, the miss, 275,000 instead of 198,000. Why is it that the Dow continues to miss with such regularity?
Well, you've heard all the jokes about economists trying to predict things. Well, that's what's happening here. There's no way they can predict what's happening. But when you look at the details, what you find is the miss was that they keep underestimating the growth of government. The number one sector in this particular report is government growing, then healthcare, social assistance. So you just see lots of non-value creating parts of the economy that are growing. And the analysts on Wall Street just are surprised that those sectors continue to expand despite the fact that supposedly the economy is in good shape.
So you see this growth in the economy. You see that people are trying to get jobs, especially when you take a look at the BLS numbers, that the number of unemployed increased 334,000. So 275,000 people got jobs, but the total number of unemployed people increased 334,000 to 6.5 million, which is 500,000 people more than this time last year. When I see that, I see people needing money and no jobs being available for them to get the money because the employer, while maybe desperate to hire, is looking at their economic future, looking at the country's future and saying, I don't trust what's happening. I would rather hunker down than take the risk of expansion and losing it all. Am I wrong or am I right?
Well, I'm going to take a different angle because I don't think it's the employer looking to protect themselves. I think what we see is the great resignation finally starting to recede. That's how I would look at this. The reason we have this increase in the unemployment rate was because more people are entering the workforce. You just quoted that data. As those people enter the workforce, they're entering at a faster rate than they're getting jobs. So on the surface, the headline says good job growth. But why did the market react negatively? Because more people entered the workforce. You talked about it. We've talked about it. People are using their savings. They're putting things on credit card. The credit card numbers are terrible. The savings rate is terrible. The great resignation looks like it's about to resign, if I can use that pun. And that's what we're seeing here. It's the headline looks good. The details, not so good. It's not because they're afraid to expand.
Talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, let me push back on that. I know anecdotally small business owners in my Indianapolis, Central Indiana area who are hiring and they want to hire. But when I see this, that the jobless rate is up, more people are looking for jobs, yes, I believe that people have run out of money and they need to get jobs again because whatever it is that they were living on, whether it was government money or savings, is gone. But I don't necessarily see that more people are hiring. Now, maybe I'm engaged in my own level of contradiction because if the total payroll employment rose 275,000 versus the prediction, people are hiring. But I know a lot of people looking to hire. It would seem to me that all these people could get jobs in this economy, but I also can show you the massive amount of layoffs, which would lead me to the place that I'm at, which is people don't feel good about the economy going forward and don't feel good about trying to grow their business going forward. Why am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but it's not that simple. There's two parts to this. One is a skills mismatch, and that is that people are looking to hire, but they can't find those with the right skills to put into the job. So that's part of it. The second part is, you are correct. where these people are thinking, is the economy going to grow? Because the growth that we just saw, the headline number, was not in the private sector. Construction, transportation, those things are still growing at a very slow rate. So you are correct, Tony, in that those segments, the private economy is not exploding the way it should. It's the government economy that's growing. But we do still see the skills mismatch. So you have to keep that in mind as well.
Now, when I go back to these numbers, I see unemployment up to 3.9%. Certainly, that is not something you want when you're running for president of the United States. It's up 0.2 percentage points, but when we go to a year earlier, it's up 0.3 percentage points to 3.9. If you're Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, and you're desperate to get a rate cut in, you're desperate to try and make people feel good that all of the work that's been done and the rate increases have paid off, inflation's under control, does this unemployment number, up 0.3% from a year ago, bolster Jerome Powell's opportunities, or does it hinder?
It hinders it. And you will see this in the headlines. The business press will report on what you just said, that Jerome Powell is now nervous. He wanted it. He said it last week. Earlier this week, he said he wants to do a rate cut. He expressed a desire to do it. And this information is slapping him in the face. But let's not forget one of the piece of data that he's looking for, and that is the revisions. You and I talked about this. The revisions have been huge. And we're waiting for the revision reports to see, is the last few months going to be revised down again? That's going to make him more nervous. So I think it's 50-50 whether he gets a rate cut in this year still.
He's been talking about three, and the Federal Reserve talked about three, and then I refer to those minutes that said, yeah, we know we said three, but no one actually can believe it true. What are the other indicators, right? The administration is desperate to tell us how this economy is going great and everything's going gangbusters, desperate to tell us this, and I have stated out loud, I don't mind if the economy's good. I think it would be great. It'd be better for Americans. I'd be much happier if the economy was good, but nothing is showing me that. Do you have anything? We've talked about trends before. We've talked about some data that could be read well, and then we saw inflation going up and saying, okay, that's the end of inflation going down. Do you have anything that you've been looking at, anything that you've been tracking that makes you say, hey, this looks positive over here? Anything at all?
Yes. Artificial intelligence is increasing productivity. We saw 2 months in a row now of incredibly strong productivity increases. That means we are producing more per hour of labor. And what gets me upset is, while that's good news and I want to see more of it, and I predict we will, I'm not a prediction guy, but I'm telling you, AI has incredible uses that we haven't even touched the tip of yet. What upsets me about that is Biden's going to try to take credit for something that he's trying to hinder. And that upsets me, because a private economy, entrepreneurs, people like you, Tony, who are trying to do things with business, that's where the greatness of the economy is, yet the president's going to try to take credit for it when he's actually hindering it.
So your look on Jerome Powell is that there's nothing that tells you that a rate cut can come. I mean, that we're kind of trying to prognosticate the future, and we shouldn't do that. But is there something specifically that Jerome Powell has said, or something specifically in this jobs report that makes you say, yeah, I'm not looking, I don't believe that a rate cut is coming in 2024?
Yes. The fact that the growth in the private economy was not where it should be. That's what's causing him to be concerned, and the fact that it's in the public sector, which is another indicator of possible inflation. Yes, he just got evidence to say the chance of a rate cut is less likely. I'm sure he's not happy with this report.
Talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, you brought up AI, and I wanted to get into this with you the other day when we spoke. That if you take a look at where the Dow is, if you take a look at these top seven stocks They were in the positive. Everything else was in the negative. You have brought that up. And you have brought up again that the investment into artificial intelligence has been saving the market, has been making the market look good. What kind of dollars are we talking about flowing into this space? And is it expected from people like yourself, economists like yourself, that that's going to continue throughout 2024?
Yes. In fact, every report I've seen indicates that the data processing, and we do that every day. I mean, you do it in your job. 10% of the data processed in the economy this year will be generated by AI, not human beings. That we've never seen that much of an increase in 1 year in a segment of the economy. We can't even dream of what this is going to do for the economy. No one can prognosticate what's going to happen. It is beyond our comprehension how powerful the tool, and as companies begin to use it, this is like the internet. This is going to be the next iteration of evolution.
Except this isn't like the internet. So allow me to be the guy who pushes back on that. This isn't like the internet because the federal government is already starting to play around with the idea of levels of intervention. The government didn't get involved in limiting or slowing down the scope of internet growth, and that allowed the internet to grow in a way that benefited all and create great opportunity. And when it comes to AI, the federal government is extremely interested in what happens and what's going on, and they could absolutely engage in limitations. What is the concern there?
Well, you just said exactly what I said a few moments ago, Tony, that my fear is that he's going to take credit for this incredible AI productivity in the economy when this president is doing everything he can to stop it. It boggles the mind. He's trying to stop it, but when it succeeds, he's going to take credit for it. I can't predict if they will succeed. I predict they won't, and let me tell you why. Because they're not smart enough to regulate it. They're going to focus in on the AI that generates, the poor photographs of people that are inaccurate or information in social media. They're not going to regulate the stuff that businesses do with it. They have no clue how to do that.
Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. More is coming up. I'm Tony Katz.
To state the obvious, all Americans deserve the freedom to be safe. And America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then, through my American Rescue Plan, which every American voted against, I might add, we made the largest investment in public safety ever. Last year, the murder rate saw the sharpest decrease in history. Violent crime fell to one of its lowest levels in more than 50 years. But we have more to do.
Is that right? We have more to do. Sure we do, Mr. President. Why don't you scream about it some more while you're telling us we're all safer? Meanwhile, who in the world was that heckling during the State of the Union? Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Find it all, TonyKatz.com. And really, it is... It is good to be back. It was an incredible trip to Israel. I will be going back. I just know this. I am surprised it took me 3 decades to get back. But that's the way it went. And this was a good trip. And good in that I just... A, I learned. And B, you just... To see the devastation and realize that the version that American press has given is so horrifically sanitized and so supportive of Gaza, which is to say Hamas, this is indecent stuff. The press has a lot to answer for, and there's a reason they're not trusted. And when Biden goes on a tear, as he did in the State of the Union, about we have to return trust to the institutions have to be trustworthy. They're not. But back to this heckler. Who was the heckler? The heckler. His name is Steve Nakui. Steve Nakui is the father of a Marine, Lance Corporal Kareem Nakui, who was killed at the Abbey Gate. This is about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The suicide bomber who clearly knew where the Americans were going to be because the pullout, the withdrawal from Afghanistan was so horrific, so horribly put together, horribly planned, horribly executed. You had 13 U.S. service members who were killed in that blast. And that is all on Biden. And no one's talking about it. We watched it happen. We said it was horrific, and then everybody forgot. Whoop. Moving on. Oh, I'm supposed to believe that this was the best speech that Biden ever gave. You listen to these leftists, they'll all tell you the greatest speech is the greatest thing. It was Biden at his absolute best. It was nothing's ever been better in the history of ever. Biden's just so great. Biden's just so wonderful. He just, you know, right out of the park, he put it right there.
Right.
Oh, no doubt about it. It was his best speech of his presidency by far.
If this was a gold star father screaming about Donald Trump, that's all Joe Scarborough and MSNBC would be talking about. By the way, Joe Scarborough has become not a fool, a caricature. This is a ridiculous program that is not based in reality. Neither is Joe Scarborough, which proves my point. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. Having sex with Mika Brzezinski does something terrible to the mind. I don't know what else to ascribe it to, so I'm putting it to this. Oh, that's so rude. Well, you can have your own theory. Maybe you're right. Gold star father. Disgusted with the president for how he acted, disgusted with the president for getting his son killed, and no one in the media cares. That was the heckler. I don't like heckling. But after hearing this State of the Union, they should have canceled it. This wasn't a State of the Union. This was a stump speech. This was, hey, look at me, I'm running for president. Let me use this time to run for president. It was poorly delivered. And the things that they want to say are successes, America doesn't see that way. I will break down more of it in the weeks to come. But remember, it's not going to move the needle. Don't forget that part. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. Monday, everyone. Take care.